Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good morning, boys. It is Friday. We made it to the end of the week. We made it to the beginning of the NFL playoffs.
Yes.
'Twas the night before said playoffs in the NFL, and here we are, an amazing weekend to preview, and come tomorrow, everything that happened in the regular season gets tossed. Everybody gets a fresh slate. Tabula rasa, as you would say, Nick Wright.
I don't know what that means, so I don't know if I would say it,
but okay. And for Dallas, that's important.
She writes her own material.
After a rough 3-5 start to their season. Mangini knows what I'm talking about. For Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, a lot of pressure on these two, both in the playoffs for the second time in their careers. Last time, they couldn't get out of the first round. This time, they'll hope to do that against a very good Seahawks team. Here's Dak Prescott on what's at stake this weekend.
I don't pay attention to any stat but wins and losses. So when you say success of a quarterback or a quarterback success, depending on what they do in the playoffs, I think that's where the checks get written and they make their money, to be honest. Our job is to win, no matter what happens, no matter how you play individually. At the end of the day, it's to get the job done. So excited for my opportunity to be obviously back in the playoffs, missing it last year, but excited for this team and just knowing what we've got.
The reality of the playoffs is this. Everybody's record 0-0, and you want to go 1-0 every week. I think more than anything else is you just got to play with a clear head and go out there, and hopefully we can do that in the playoffs and do some special things.
All right, CeCe, let's dive into this one. What do you think, in your opinion, is the key to this matchup between the Cowboys and Seahawks?
A lot of people will have this as the key in the playoffs. It's got to be turnovers. And it's just not because it's an NFL playoff game, but it's the opposition, who you're going. More teams are more apt to turn it over, especially based on who carries the ball for them or whoever their quarterback is. Since Russell Wilson has been in the NFL, he's not a guy that is prone to a bunch of turnovers. And if you look at him in the most important games, he doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Seattle this year, 8 games leading the NFL, no turnovers. The whole team, 8 games. If you can do that in the NFL, you're going to win a lot of games. Dak Prescott, his inability to be able to generate big plays coming off. Is he going to hold the ball? And when you hold the ball as a quarterback, it opens you up to be knocked out, have the ball knocked out of your hand and interceptions down the field. So what Seattle will be trying to do to Dak Prescott is to force him into turnovers. And what they've been able to do is Russell Wilson not only being accurate, making big plays in their passing game late in games, but their ability to play a clean game. If you look at 16 regular season games, half of those games I'm not going to turn the ball over. Nick, you always talk about the numbers, the probability of winning those games. Mm-hmm. If you don't turn it over, the probability of you winning the turnover battle is going to be huge, but win it by multiple turnovers, which I believe is the big thing. And when you start winning it by one, the percentages are there that you're going to win predominantly most of the games. But by two or three,
you win basically all of them.
You're going to win 75% of those games. So that's the reason why I believe it's the key to this game. Dak trying to have a clean slate, because I believe Russell Wilson will not turn the ball over in this game.
And if turnovers are the key to this game, that tilts heavily in Seattle's favor. They are number one in the league in turnover margin. They, mm-hmm. To your point, they only turn the ball over 11 times all year long. They forced 26, so there's a plus 15 for them. Dallas pretty good, by the way, at not turning the ball over. They were fifth in the league for fewest turnovers, but that was still 17. They averaged right around one a game, and it's because of Russell Wilson, and give the running back credit for not fumbling the ball, but my key to the game is the Russell Wilson we've seen this year in the fourth quarter going to be the Russell Wilson we see for four quarters? Because Russell's numbers in totality this year were very good. Career high in touchdowns, career high in the fewest picks of his career, and the highest quarterback rating. But if you just had what he did in the fourth quarter and had that be what he did throughout the game, he would have had a 5,000-yard season rushing, passing combined, wow, 40 touchdowns, a 109 rating, nearly 9 yards per attempt. He was good through the first three quarters of games this year. He was the best quarterback in football in the fourth quarter, and I think that will be the Seattle mentality, if you will, and Russell's mentality from the word go. And one name to watch, when we talk about this game, we're going to talk about Dak, we're going to talk about Zeke, Russell, Doug Baldwin, Frank Clark, Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett, who was targeted 70 times this year, and on those passes, had a perfect passer rating, did Russell. 965 yards, 10 touchdowns, 57 catches, no interceptions. The Lockett-Russell Wilson combination was one of the most potent quarterback wide receiver combinations in football this year. That's not going, you can't go into a game against Seattle saying we have to stop Tyler Lockett, because then the running game will gash you, Doug Baldwin will kill you, but he has been an enormous X factor for them all season long.
This is probably the tightest matchup of what we're going to see this weekend. These are two 10-6 teams, two very athletic quarterbacks, two very good defenses. What do you think differentiates the two? Could it come down to coaching, if you will?
Well, coaching plays a huge part in it. Also, the adjustments. Are you going to trust Pete Carroll to be able to make his adjustments, or is Dallas and their coaching staff with Jason Garrett able to get Dak and that offense to be able to play at a style that's conducive to that defense playing well? So I believe coaching will be negated on both sides. Even though Pete Carroll has a stronger playoff record, he's a stronger career record, he's a Super Bowl champion, I believe the ability to be able to make big plays. It's hard to sustain drives, 8-12 play drives. It's very, very rare. But if you can have those big, and not just because I'm a wide receiver, it makes it better for the quarterbacks, makes it better for the offensive line. If you're able to get those big chunk plays, 20 yards through the passing game, and for me, Dallas, are they able to incorporate their tight end the way they did in week number 17, the last 15, 16, 17? They started throwing to the tight end far more than they did during the regular season. You know Amari Cooper is going to be a huge part of that, but can they generate some big plays from the tight end position?
And one thing we're going to talk about a lot on the show today in all these matchups, and I thought it was very interesting the way Chris yesterday, when we were talking about these matchups, kept coming back to this point, kept asking about the games, and Chris's first point almost every time was, all that matters is to win. And that might seem obvious, but it was because we are now in a different part of the season where, for the quarterbacks most notably, this is where the quarterback win stat and the legacy stuff really does come into play. When we talk about, is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? It's all about what he did in the postseason. What is the one, Phillip Rivers, when we talk about him, it's the only knock, it's what he hasn't done in the postseason. We know the environment won't be too big for Russell Wilson. We know that. The guy's been to two Super Bowls, has been extraordinary. This will be, I don't know, the 12th biggest game he's played in his NFL career. For Dak and the Cowboys, we don't know that. And I do think it's instructive. As good as Dak and the Cowboys' offense was in the second half of their only other playoff game, they came out in that first half against Green Bay when Green Bay built that double-digit lead like a young team,
yep,
that the moment was, even though they were at home, they weren't quite ready to get punched in the mouth the way they did. Now, credit to them for overcoming that and making that a close game. I don't think this Dallas team is built to come back from a double-digit deficit. They surprised me when they were able to do it a couple years ago or nearly able to do it. This team's different. This team's not as explosive. And so I think it's very important that they come out ready, because they're not going to have a few drives to be able to get acclimated to the playoff moment. Game could get away from them by then.
How much does where they play help? How much is it going to help their nerves that they're in Dallas?
Well, we know they struggled earlier in the season playing away from Dallas. Any team would love to be able to play in the playoffs. You don't want to go on the road. It's such an advantage. Your prep there is better. You're used to the homely confines. You're getting the same thing to eat, and the crowd is on your side. All teams are going to be nervous, regardless of what the players say, but you got less nerves at home, because just being in that friendly and the crowd is cheering for you, and you pull on that energy. Much prefer to be at home than on the road.
And I thought one thing Coach Mangini said yesterday that you poked fun at, because he said, all games are going to be the same amount of time, is I thought it was a really good point. This is going to be a short game. As pardon me, as far as both teams loving to run the football, and you're not going to have, how many drives does a team have in a typical football game? Like 10 to 12, right?
Yeah.
I think you can pare that down by about 20%. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a game where each team has 8 to 10 drives instead of 10 to 12 drives, because they're going to be elongated drives where the clock is running because they're running the football. That makes converting third and short, that's always important, but if the ability to continue drives, keep your punter off the field in a game like this where you might only have two drives a quarter, only touch the ball twice a quarter offensively, makes it all the more important.
All right, we'll talk much more about this game. Seahawks and Cowboys Saturday, 8:15 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Coming up, can Nick Foles keep the magic going against the Bears? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to Eagles Bears in a second. First, couple of highlights from last night. D2 Hoops, Sean Willett of Queens University in Charlotte slamming it down.
Oh, he takes off outside the circle there.
Man. Oh, yeah. Midway down the lane, goes and gets. There's so many great. This is Division II basketball in Charlotte. There's 30 people there, and that guy's going out and doing that. So
on
many
to
great
the NBA,
players.
De'Aaron Fox, what a second year he's been having. The N1 falls.
Oh, look at this.
I definitely have him in the top 10 athletes in the NBA. Former quarterback, lefty. Man, love Michael Vick. Yeah, I met with him. Do I know him? Yeah.
What?
Met with him when he was a freshman at UK. Yeah, no big deal.
I've said this before, but I watched him play AAU ball one whole summer down in Houston. One of the fastest players with the ball in his hands I've ever seen.
Said he's the fastest in the NBA.
He's certainly on that list.
Spurs and Raptors, DeMar DeRozan splitting two defenders.
Nice night for the Spurs.
Triple-double for him.
Nice night for DeRozan, a Spurs team that has found a way. They've used mid-range jump shots, something nobody likes, into a top-8 offense in basketball.
But as nice as the beer. James Harden, the game-winning shot to beat the Golden State Warriors. Another fantastic night for James Harden.
This is clutch as it gets, not only at the beginning of the game, not only at the end of the regulation, but in overtime, James Harden was special. That's why in yesterday's conversation, I tried to tell you guys got to have him in the MVP conversation.
Oh,
you guys, oh, the Greek freak and all oh, man. Giannis is doing this, and he's the real unicorn.
Man.
Okay, that's the real beard right there. You see why he wore the raincoat to the game?
Listen,
did you see the green raincoat?
Listen, Daryl Morey's been talking to you. I see, obviously.
Moving on.
You're big on the Rockets now.
Let's go. Moving on.
Telling me about how good Harden's been.
Magical run of Nick Foles. Even if you think the run stops this weekend when the Eagles face a stingy Bears defense, it's still been the story the last few weeks. Foles has helped the Eagles win their last three games, getting them into the postseason. Despite all of his recent success, though, both last year and this year, Nick Foles was quick to give his teammates credit.
I'm just a small piece of the puzzle that goes in there and does my job. Always out there playing for my coaches, playing for my teammates. I think that's the key, especially this time of year, is, you lean on one another. We talk about it all the time. So I've been blessed to be a part of a great group of people. And ultimately, that's led to success in, the later months and into the playoffs.
All right, CeCe, let's.
Go ahead.
When the wind hits it.
Go ahead.
Let us break this one down. How does this Eagles offense begin to deal with this very, very good Bears defense?
Well, it all starts with protection. When they put this game plan at the beginning of the week, I can guarantee you, Doug Peterson, offensive coordinator, Mike Grohl, what they told him is, listen, man, we got to be able to protect. All right, so how am I going to be able to do that? Not only are they going to have a variety of pass protections, which includes 6- and 7-man protections, but Philadelphia's got to be able to run the ball. And any offense that's effective, when you put those together, pass protection and running the ball, what it sets teams up for is the play-action pass.
Yep.
Philadelphia's got to be able to make big plays down the field. You cannot drive in that crowd, in the Windy City, against that defense, you're not going to be able to stay on the field for 12 plays. So you have to be able to bake in. Listen, someone's got to be able to make a play typically outside the numbers, because I believe they're going to put in 7-man pass protection, play action to be able to protect it up, double team, gives reinforce that middle, but double reinforce the outside so Khalil Mack doesn't take over the game and make some big plays down the field. Alshon Jeffries. coming back to the team that drafted him. He had a disappointing career there. Mike Groh was also his wide receiver coach there. Now he's the coordinator for Philadelphia. So I can believe those two right there are going to come together and be like, listen, this is a special time for you. Let's go to the Bears, upset them, knock them out of the playoffs in Soldier Field. But the big plays, throwing the ball down the field, Nick Foles, if you look at the Minnesota game, man, what did he do? Man, they threw the ball deep down the field. In the Super Bowl, shocking thing about it, no, he completed a lot of passes, but down the field making big plays against against Tom Brady and the Patriots. That's going to be the key going into Soldier Field, making big plays through the air.
In those two playoff games, see, we were talking about this before the show, four plays against the Vikings of 20-plus yards by Nick Foles, five plays against the Patriots of 20-plus yards by Nick Foles. So, that is a path to beat any type of defense or at least stay in the game. I totally agree that it's about play action and deep shots. That has been the difference in these last three games, by the way, not just the run last year, but in this stretch where they've been successful with Foles. Throw the Washington game out because that game was about the Washington offense, but their success against the Rams when they were huge underdogs playing with nothing to lose, that is what they did. The game against the Texans, the deep shots downfield a couple times, I didn't know which receiver he was throwing it to.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knew which receiver he was throwing it to, but those guys went out and made plays. You've got to find a way to use the Bears' aggressiveness against them. If there is a way in this game, if you have a version of Philly Special 2.0, if you have a trick play you've been waiting to use all year long that can use a team that's going to pursue the quarterback with the venom the Bears will and use that to catch them off guard, you're going to have to, because if Eddie Jackson, the excellent safety the Bears had who got injured at the end of the Green Bay game, had the game-sealing pick and then sprained his ankle, he's going to be back. If he's as healthy as the Bears have made it sound like he is, there's not a lot of weaknesses in this defense. There's not a lot of guys that's like, okay, they're great here and there, but we can pick on them there. They got a great corner.
One thing, I think you make some great points, but the Eddie Jackson, I don't think he's as healthy. I don't think they're putting out a message that he's healthy. Yesterday, he was hobbled in practice. He's been out of practice for 2 weeks. When you seen that ankle sprain, you knew it was going to be a trouble. He didn't come back immediately, so do I believe it's partially a high ankle sprain?
Yeah.
Which they don't like to mention? Of course it is. And if he was healthy, he would have been practicing earlier in the week compared to how vital these practices are and only being limited in yesterday's practice.
So when I say the team putting it out there, I don't mean via the injury report. I'm talking about some of his teammates' comments when they were asked about how he's been looking. I think the injury report's probably a better indication of where he is. And we saw that injury. It was a very bad luck for him. He tried to go down to be safe because it was a game-sealing pick, and he got his ankle caught in the turf, and that's how he got hurt. But if he's not 100%, then maybe that even speaks to more the ability to take deep shots, because I don't think Philadelphia is going to be able to consistently run on this defense. We talk about Khalil Mack and the pass rush, but that line, Akeem Hicks, Leonard Floyd, Roquan Smith as a middle linebacker who has been outstanding, they have been spectacular. They are the number one rush defense in the NFL. Philadelphia is the number 28 rush offense in the NFL. You've got to run the ball somewhat just to keep them honest on the play action, but I don't think they're going to be very successful with
it. And in all honesty, Nick, we were talking about Chicago before they got Khalil Mack. This was already a top 10 defense,
yes.
So you are right. Man, this is a big play defense. They got all pro levels on at every level, and they do have a lot of speed. They're very, very aggressive. One thing is, I like the point that you make about, man, they're going to have to try to use what they do well against them. Try to counter some of that speed with either a reverse, a pass, or something out of the norm. You know, the Doug Peter aggressive style.
Yes.
How does he reinvent that in this first playoff game?
So I would say the only two question marks on this team are the two faces of this team, Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. Mitch Trubisky's been great, but he's had some questionable games this season. Nick Foles obviously started slow. The last three games have been great. Which of these two quarterbacks do you trust more?
I mean, I think you have to trust Foles more just because not only playoff experience, but because what we've seen, he's played six must-win games for the Eagles. He's been an A-minus to an A-plus in all six of those games. And Mitch Trubisky, we can go down the list of quarterbacks who ended up having great careers whose first playoff game was a disaster, whose first playoff game they weren't ready for, whose first playoff game it at least took them a couple quarters to get into. That doesn't mean Trubisky can't play well, but if you're asking me who I have more belief in, the guy who I've seen it from before, I'd have to have more belief.
I'm gonna pose a different question. Not which quarterback do I believe in more, and not that I don't want to answer that question, but which quarterback would I rather be? And to me, I'd much rather be Mitch Trubisky playing with that Chicago Bears,
sure,
playing at home, and playing with that defense, because I believe there's less pressure on him than there's going to be on Nick Foles. Not because of the rush, but because of that offense in Philadelphia, man, without a quarterback, man, they're not going to be able to run the ball. So it is all reliant on his ability to be able to make good decisions down the field and to be able to start fast. That pressure right there, I believe, is going to be hard for the Eagles to be able to overcome. So Mitch Trubisky is the quarterback that I would much rather be, because also, if his fastball, say his the passing game is off, he can go to his running game. If Nick Foles is off, what do you go to? Oh, there is no fallback plan. He has no curveball. So if he's not hot like he was in week number 17 against Washington, watch out for that Philadelphia Eagles offense to struggle against the Bears.
The Bears can win without Trubisky playing well. The Eagles cannot win without Foles playing well. I think that's the kind of distillation of what Chris is saying. The Bears, one of the reasons that I think they can go to the Super Bowl is they have so many different paths to victory. There's the 1-4 games that Trubisky looks like an all-pro, and you score 35 points and you win that way. You can win because Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen combine for 200 yards rushing, you win that way. You can win the way they beat the Rams a few weeks ago, where your quarterback plays in a horrific game, mm-hmm, and your defense wins it for you. For the Eagles, I think the only way they can go into Soldier Field and upset the Bears is in addition to their defense playing well, Foles got to make some big plays.
All right, let's take a break. Talk some basketball. Coming up, does James Harden have the Rockets back in title contention next on First Things First? Tomorrow, it's a College Hoops doubleheader on Fox. First, Big Ten powerhouses collide. Number 8, Michigan State taking on number 14, Ohio State. Then it's Big East action as Villanova faces off with Providence. It all starts tomorrow at 11:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. Yesterday, the NBA released their first All-Star ballot count, and Mavs rookie Luka Doncic is second in voting amongst front court players in the West. Fans have noticed his favorite move is the step-back shot, and he's been destroying opponents with it. So yesterday, he hopped on the gram and posted this meme, which was inspired by Drake's Hotline Bling video. Open threes, nope. Step back threes, oh yeah.
Luca embracing the American culture. A little Drake, a little Instagram meme. I like it, see?
I like to see what was on his playlist. Like, you know, what's on his plate? What do you listen to all the time? He's off to a good start. It's just a question.
You always get it'll be interesting to talk to Luke in 5-6 years, because the guys like Dirk, who their exposure to American culture is NBA locker rooms, they always come up a little different and with very unique kind of senses of style, personalities. Luke has been great, man. He's been great, but that's a really cool little thing he did.
All right. It is now time for your AT&T wake-up call. The Pro Football Hall of Fame listed its 15 finalists for the 2019 class. Among the headliners, Ed Reed, Tony Gonzalez, Champ Bailey. CC, what do you make of the latest group of nominees?
Every year, it's always a great list. They got some guys, first-timers going to get in there. And anytime you have a number of guys, first-ballot Hall of Famers, it makes it tight on the rest of the field. But also, watch for a guy like Isaac Bruce to potentially get in. Watch for Ty Law to get more attention. These guys being finalists, it's going to be exciting. Looking forward to the announcement night before the Super Bowl.
One name I was happy to see was a finalist, Tom Flores, one of the first minority coaches in the NFL, was a minority quarterback in the league, won two Super Bowls as a coach years ago, was surprised he hadn't gotten in. But this is why it's such a hard haul to get in. Tony is a no-doubter. Ed Reed's a no-doubter. I believe Champ's a no-doubter. So that leaves two spots maximum for the other 12 names on the list. Mm-hmm. And every year there's at least one or two of these guys that they come on the list, they walk right in. There's only five spots. I feel like Tony, Ed, and Champ take three of them, so we'll see who the other two are.
Oh, I'm already stressed out now. Finally, James Harden keeps on balling. He had a 44-point triple-double in a win over the Warriors, including a late three in overtime to seal it. Warriors blew a 20-point lead in this one. Rockets have now won 11 of their last 12. Nick, how impressive has James Harden been in this 12-game stretch?
We're running out of words to say what he's doing because what he's doing is unprecedented. Since that 50-point game against the Lakers, which was the second game of this stretch, he's averaging 30 points a game off just threes and free throws. 30 a game off threes and free throws, taking now an insane combined 29 free throw attempts and three-point attempts per game in this 11-game stretch of the 12 games. And so he's been great. He was great again. He hit the biggest shot of the year for the Rockets in the game of the year for the NBA. I mean, these were the two best teams in the league last season. The Rockets led 6-5 and then did not lead again until overtime. And see, they were 16-15 when Chris Paul got hurt. And a lot of people said, man, they couldn't win last year without Chris Paul. How are they going to do this year without Chris Paul? They're 6-0 without Chris Paul, and the Rockets all of a sudden look like the team last year that was the biggest threat to Golden State in the West.
I think the two things were very impressive about what Harden was doing. Golden State guarded him like they would guard him in the playoffs. They were trying to trap him. They were trying to take the ball out of his hands. But his ability to be a playmaker on a higher level, to me, is the best that I've seen him. Not only his ball handling, but his decision-making, how he is getting other guys open, I believe is some of the most impressive stuff that I've been able to see. And without two starters, to go on the road in Oracle to give them the third straight loss at home, first time they've done that under Steve Kerr. So I thought those two things were some of the most impressive things that we've seen this season. So the productivity and to be able to do it on that stage I thought was tremendous.
And one other note from this game, the NBA's own data says during the Western Conference playoffs last year, the Western Conference finals, the Warriors got a +8 or +9 point advantage in officiating during that series. And a series that came down to game seven, came down to the wire. Last night, you saw that once again, including as bad of a missed call as I've ever seen on the Durant out-of-bounds play. If people didn't watch at the end of the game, it's tied late with 10 seconds. Durant is running out of bounds, saves the ball, and the referees miss it. That's something that's got to get cleaned up before this postseason if these two teams are going to meet again.
Durant said that, too. He's like, I'm surprised that they didn't
Everyone
see that.
Everyone knew it. He's 7 feet tall, running out of bounds.
Harper said the same thing. Moving on to the Baltimore Ravens. She's 5 years old. Tale of two halves for them this season. The first half, Lamar Jackson was a backup to Joe Flacco. The team was treading water with a great defense and a very average offense. Well, they still have the great defense, but Lamar Jackson has turned this offense around, leading the Ravens to 6 wins in their last 7 games and a matchup with Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. And this surprised even Lamar.
I can't lie. No, I didn't think about it at all. You know, I told him when I came in, you know, I came in to learn. You know, whether it's this year, next year, you know, I just want to sit out and learn, and I just got my ticket the middle of the season, threw me out there, and, you know, we've been having success.
Lamar, you're going to be the youngest quarterback in NFL history to start a playoff game. Does that mean anything to you?
No, I don't. It really don't. I don't really look at it like that. You know, I'm here to play football. I was 21 all year, so this another game for me.
All right, CeCe, how do the Ravens beat the Chargers?
Well, the only way they're going to beat him is their quarterback get over his naiveness to the stage of what he's getting ready to play. Because this is no ordinary football game. Ordinary completions, this is no ordinary. If you complete a 20-yard out, it's totally different in the playoffs than it would be during the regular season. So I think that their front office and their veteran leadership that they have will get his attention before he gets onto the field, because I know this in playing in a number of playoff games, that sometimes you wake up, it's a little too late. You realize, man, this intensity is exactly what the people said. So I expect Lamar to understand that before he hits the ground, because I just believe it's very, very important for him in this game. Because we were talking earlier, you know, what about his legs? What about his arm? Like, what's the more important ingredient in this game? And Lamar's not an NFL quarterback if he doesn't have the type of legs that he has. And also, his legs open up the rest of that offense. So their ability to be able to dominate time of possession, is Baltimore able to do what they've done since Lamar has been there? Their defense has been nasty almost the whole season. But their ability to run the football and run it at a historic level in time of possession, and if they have you only playing 25 minutes and they have the ball 35 minutes, it's hard to impossible to win an NFL game. So, Lamar, It's very important. This game is very important. Time of possession, watch the playoff. Watch the teams that win and watch time of possession. If they're able to duplicate what they've done during the regular season, we will see Lamar Jackson and we will see this Baltimore Ravens team advance to the divisional round, which they, I mean, this is a talented, talented football team that caught fire at the right time.
Since the Ravens, since Lamar took over for the Ravens, this is, to me, a jarring number. They have outrushed their opposition 1,600 yards to 400 yards.
Wow.
That's a testament to how great the defense is and at what a nearly unprecedented clip the Ravens are running the football in the modern NFL. 230 yards per game. Over that same stretch, the second best mark, I believe to be Seattle at 170, so 60 more yards per game. We know what their path is. I thought before the show when you and I were talking about this game, you said something really interesting, which is Lamar is going to see some of the most basic coverages of any guy out there.
He will have the easiest looks of all the 12 quarterbacks in the playoffs. The defense will be the simplest.
So explain why that is.
Because he's a running quarterback. You have to be very, very disciplined. They're not going to be real exotic in their coverages and in their blitzes, because if he gets out of the pocket and you're playing man-to-man and your backs are to the defense, those type of coverages, you're going to eliminate those type of coverages. So what do you want? You want to make it very, very basic, all right, for your guys so that they can play fast to negate his overall speed. So that's what I look for the Chargers to be able to do. They're going to play some basic coverages, and their fronts are going to be basic so that everyone stays in their lane and remains disciplined.
Sometimes there's a matchup in the playoffs where two teams played earlier in the year, and it's kind of irrelevant. I think Cowboys-Seahawks is similar, is like that. They played in week three.
Amari Cooper wasn't there.
There were so many. You can take tiny things. This isn't one of those cases. These teams played a couple weeks ago when the Chargers were fighting for the one seed, the Ravens were fighting to make the playoffs, a critical game for both teams. And going into that game, I thought Derwin James, the do-everything safety for the Chargers, could have a huge impact. He didn't have as big of an impact as I thought he would, and certainly as the Chargers needed him to. I still think Derwin James is a player to watch in this game, especially now having the experience going up against him. But the takeaway from that game was the Chargers' offense total inability to move the ball whatsoever. They had one touchdown drive. That wasn't even a drive. That was after a Ravens turnover inside the 20-yard line. Phillip Rivers and the Chargers' offense was totally stymied by this Ravens defense. And that was, by the way, in Los Angeles. Now they're going to be in Baltimore. It's going to be colder. It's not supposed to rain, but weather is a bigger factor for no other reason than the temperature the game's going to be played at. All of that, to me, plays into Baltimore's favor.
Yeah, I totally disagree with you, because the reason why I thought Baltimore was going to have a chance in California was because Lamar was going to be able to throw the ball. I had a number, I think, 220 in that game that he should throw.
He threw
for 200.
200.
Man, he's going to barely get over 100 yards in Baltimore. So I just believe the offense of Baltimore is better functioning in warmer weather, because they threw the ball down the field. They got their tight ends involved in the game. When you come back to the East Coast, I believe it's totally different. Who do you trust more? Which offense do you trust more? I believe Melvin Gordon's going to be healthier. And I believe that Keenan Allen is going to show up. He's one of the best receivers, Pro Football Focus, the top five receiver. He hasn't had that big stage, and he didn't play well in that Baltimore Ravens. So for me, I'm on the other side as far as Nick. I believe, which one of these offenses do I trust in any type of weather? Oh, it's the Chargers offense, because of who they have and their variance for which they're going to be able to attack that Baltimore defense.
And I want to talk one thing about Phillip Rivers here, because I alluded to it earlier in the show. This guy's regular season resume, you can put up against almost any quarterback that's not one of the five or six greatest quarterbacks ever. Certainly any quarterback of the era other than Brady, Manning, and Rodgers. But his postseason resume is very limited. And since LaDainian Tomlinson left the San Diego Chargers at the time, his postseason resume is essentially non-existent. Mm-hmm. He had the great moment where he fought through a torn ACL, played an AFC championship game on a torn ACL, and that's the highest up the mountaintop he's gotten. This is the best Charger team he's been on since those 14-2 Charger teams under Marty Schottenheimer. This is, despite they have the tough road as far as being the five seed and having to go on the road, this is the best chance Phillip Rivers has had to rewrite that playoff resume, create a playoff legacy in the better part of a decade. I really am interested in seeing how he plays. It's a good team, good coach, good defense, and now we're going to see how Phillip Rivers goes up against a great defense.
And even though it's a lack of experience, experience, playoff experience for Phillip Rivers. He's still the more composed of the two quarterbacks. He understands how big the stage is, much more so than obviously Lamar.
Yeah, he's going to take the game with more composure. But as that clock begins to go tick, 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 his career is going tick, 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 too. So Lamar might be a little more cavalier, being like, man, this is Baltimore. Hey, I'm going to be starting here for a long time. I'm going to be back. Phillip Rivers, I mean, you can count in your
Sunset's
right hand
coming.
The number of times he's going to be able to, and how long will he have this kind of talent surrounding him?
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, are Russell Wilson and the Seahawks just too much for the Cowboys to handle? That's ahead on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. First, head coach Eric Mancini is here. Hey,
we're
coach.
On TV.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Right, sometimes I need right, a little ding ding reminder. What do you always say?
Just, Jenna, I don't want to distract you any further. I talk about that you get distracted by squirrels that don't
that's
exist.
It.
That's what
it.
I say.
That's
what
you
Nick?
Say.
Wait, squirrel.
That's what I say. That time, Jenna forgot the name of the television show and fell out of her chair 3 seconds before.
Yeah, what a dressing and I pumps. Mean,
wow. Anyway, here I am, and here's back. Coach yep. Nick, and we got ourselves a Chris Carter, and we're going to start reading. Mm-hmm. If you put your money on Andrew Luck this year, you've made quite a return. That's because he made quite a return. After missing all of last year, he's got the Colts in the playoffs with a 10-6 record. He'll face a familiar foe, though, in the Houston Texans. Colts split the season series with them this year. Luck, in all his gosh dang exuberance, said after all he's been through, it's nice to be back in the postseason.
And I'm having fun, and to me that's the most important thing. And the fact that we get to go play another game in the playoffs and see what we can do, that's stinking awesome. And I think a small part of us understands how special it's been so far. And I said this afterward, fulfilling. You know, I feel this season, in a sense, that every game has been fulfilling, but satisfied? No, not at all. I mean, we know there is work to do, and we know that it starts with today. It starts with getting better today.
Just a little bit corny, but in the most lovable.
In an endearing way.
Very endearing.
But that's really who he is. Compared to some of these other quarterbacks that have all these manufactured answers and everything, that's exactly who Andrew Luck is. Goodness gracious, with that neck beard.
I mean.
Stinking awesome.
All right, Coach, let's break this game down a little bit. What's the key here? What do you see as the key in this matchup?
Well, look, I've loved this series. You go to the first game, Houston's on a 9-game losing streak. They win in overtime. They were up big. The Colts come back, and then they flip it. And then the Colts break the winning streak, and it's been back and forth. I think it comes down to Deshaun Watson. I think he ends up being the most pivotal guy here. They've been able to sack him 12 times in the two games. And I know yesterday I said it's not all the offensive line, but even if we discount 62 sacks by 20%, it's still a lot of sacks. So
yes.
they need him to be able to stay upright. They need him to be able to move around in the pocket and deal with that pressure that the Colts are going to be able to generate. And then he's got another challenge where he's not able to spread the ball around very much. I mean, it's one receiver and then everybody else, and it makes it hard.
And he's done is most notably in that comeback or the near comeback against Philadelphia where they came back and then the defense couldn't hold it. I mean, all of a sudden, Vincent Smith, a guy who I was not familiar with, he was making big plays. Will Fuller and Deshaun had a great connection. He lost him. They bring in Demaryius Thomas. They lose him. They have Kiki Coutee, the rookie, coming back, but they had lost him for a stretch.
Now, he had a great game the first time they played.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was almost his breakout show to a degree because that was the first pick they had in this draft because they didn't have first or second rounder. But we were talking before the show, see, this is, I think, the most notable game of the weekend where we maybe talk too much about quarterbacks on shows like this, but this game is about the two quarterbacks. What are the Colts without Andrew Luck? Oh, we saw him last year. They're a 4-win team. What are the Texans without Deshaun Watson? Oh, we saw that last year, too.
Right, they're a good defense.
Right, that won 4 games. Like both of these quarterbacks have to play great, not for their teams to win, for their teams to have a chance to win. And that's one of the reasons, personally, I favor the Colts heavily in this game because I think the people around Andrew Luck are going to give him the opportunity to play great more so than the people around Deshaun Watson. The Colts offensive line has been extraordinary. Their running game's been better than Houston's. And all of a sudden, Eric Ebron is looking like the first-round pick he was in Detroit that he never showed in Detroit. We know T.Y. Hilton even hampered how dominant he's been in this matchup, in this building. For all those reasons, I think the Colts are better positioned for their quarterback to play great.
When I look at these quarterbacks and I see which quarterback can have success because a lot of the game is dependent on them to be successful, I look at, okay, Because I know Coach Mangini, if I'm playing against him, whoever my number one guy is, they're going to take that away. So I say DeAndre Hopkins. Let's say the Colts can take him away. Let's just say the Texans can take away T.Y. Hilton. Which quarterback is more likely to still be successful, supported by either some other receiver or others or some type of running game? And to me, I believe that what Frank Wright has done, and man, these NFL owners, try to follow what the Colts did last year. Hire a coach. He decide not to come, and you go down your list and maybe your third or fourth guy. But Chris Ballard felt very comfortable with Frank Wright, who the person was and what type of offense he could provide for Andrew Luck. And they changed the face of that franchise where they're going to be physical. You know, of course, I'm joking as far as model. They fell into it. But Frank Wright's ability in his first coaching job to be able to change the culture, we're going to get the ball out of our hands. So that's why I have more faith in the Colts, because what they have done, they have established a running game, they've established a culture of you're not going to hit our quarterback, and if they were to take away their number one wide receiver, I just believe Andrew Luck has the wisdom and the wherewithal to get to Ebron and those others, and I believe those players would be more significant than the others for the Texans coach.
And we you've got to give Frank Wright and Andrew Luck a lot of credit for getting the ball out of Andrew Luck's hands, for not taking those sacks. That's always been an issue that I've had with Andrew Luck and with the systems that he's played in, and he's doing so much better at protecting himself, because if he goes, the team goes. And you see the force multiplier component to Andrew Luck, where a guy like Eric Ebron, who didn't do anything or who struggled for as long as he did, mm-hmm. now comes back and has this breakout season, and he spread the ball around to a lot of guys. That, to me, is the biggest challenge for Romeo Crennel. Is okay, you got to take away T.Y. Hilton, but he does a nice job of distributing it to other guys, to the second and third option. And there's got to be an element, too, of disguise and trying to make him make post-snap reads.
You also can't start 1-5 and be in the tournament if your team hasn't been outstanding on both sides of the ball during this stretch. During this stretch of winning 9 of 10, the number one scoring defense in the NFL is the Indianapolis Colts. So all of a sudden, and that I think that would
shock. That's a phenomenal. Well, no, people don't know that. And the only reason why they'll be like, oh, just to take a little, oh, like they think they know more football. That's a shocking stat right there.
It's a shocking, the number one point differential team, meaning who's outscored their opponent by the most, the Indianapolis Colts. It's why the Texans cannot be thrilled this is the team they drew. It's the one of the best years in their short franchise history, the closest they've come to a bye in franchise history, mm-hmm. and you get the hottest team in the league right now coming into your building, and a team that's played there every year that building's been in existence and has had enormous success there.
But that being said, they also know each other really well, and these games come down to 3 points mm-hmm. or overtime. So as unlucky as it may seem, having that firsthand knowledge, to me, that's an
edge. It helps you prep.
It helps you prep. And look, Matt Eberflus does a nice job, and he has done a nice job, defense coordinator for the Colts. And he's creative, and he did a lot of creative things the last time they played. It's going to be interesting to see how Deshaun reacts to the new wrinkles this week.
How important is the last quarter of the regular season for two teams that are now in the playoffs with that momentum? Because one of these teams is just steamrolling through.
People say, well, is momentum real? Nick and I, we were going over the playoff teams.
Man, this is crazy.
And the numbers of hot teams, like Nick asked me, well, Chris, can you remember the last time? I was like, no. Typically, you have 3 or 4 teams stumbling. I mean, they need a glass of water into the playoffs, not in this year's
Every
case.
Team that's made the wild card round is that's playing the wild card round had slow starts and spectacular finishes. I'll go through it quickly. The Bears have won 9 of 10. The Eagles have won 5 of 6. The Cowboys have won 7 of 8. The Seahawks have won 6 of 7. The Chargers have won 5 of 6. The Ravens have won 6 of 7. The Colts have won 9 of 10. The least hot one is the Texans, who have won 11 of 13.
Can you write that down in your notebook so next year when we're talking about this, you understand that?
Put a big note. I shouldn't strike
your team. Slow start does not equal out of playoffs.
What those numbers mean in this new NFL, there's a lot of teams going to come out of training camp going to scramble. But in this new NFL, your team can recover because you can use that month of September, the Belichick way, the New England way.
That's what
that number shows right there. If you get off to a bad start, you can recover and build your football team.
Yeah, and you got to figure out who you are and who you need to be. And the good coaches and the good teams are able to do that.
All right, got to take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, what do the Cowboys need from Dak Prescott to take down Seattle? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here here with Coach Mangini and back to that magical run of Nick Foles. Even if you think the run stops this weekend when the Eagles face a stingy Bears defense, it's still been the story the last couple weeks. Foles has helped the Eagles win their last three games, getting them into the postseason. Despite all of his recent success, though, both last year and this year, Nick Foles was quick to give his teammates credit.
I'm just a small piece of the puzzle that goes in there and does my job. You know, always out there playing for my coaches, playing for my teammates. You know, I think that's the key, especially this time of year, is, you know, you lean on one another. We talk about it all the time. So I've been blessed to be a part of a great group of people. And ultimately, that's led to success in, you know, the later months and into the playoffs.
All right, says all the right things, that Nick Foles.
Oh, yeah, that's why I come and do the show. I do it for you, John. I do it for you, Nick, and your kids. Yeah, the support there, the director, Kenna.
He is beloved in that locker room.
Yeah. What
right
about
now?
Yourself? Yeah, stop.
All right, Coach, the Eagles have an uphill battle against this Bears defense this weekend.
Yeah, this is another great storyline. After doing conga lines, and then they had parades, and then they had speaking engagements and book signings and all those different things. And look, we went through the same thing in New England after our first Super Bowl, and we struggled, but we were able to get it together late in the season. But we, even at 9-7, we got knocked out. They have a chance to go back. And to me, that's interesting. That's exciting to see how they respond. That experience that they have is real. And they're back to that underdog mentality that served them so well. They're back to Nick Foles, which served them so well. So it's going to be interesting to see. Now, they have to handle Mac. And the way they're going to do that is with a lot of different approaches. They're going to have to chip him with the back. They're going to have to use the tight end to help him chip him as well, maybe bring a receiver in to blunt him. You got to use screens. You've got to use draws. You've got to alternate the passing attack with short passes. And then they can't really use cadence because they're going to be on the road, but going in and out of some no huddle, changing the tempo, forcing those guys to react to up tempo, slower tempo, somewhere in between, and just keeping them off balance the whole game.
It's hard now because we know what Tom Brady's become, but I want to go back to
what's he become?
The greatest quarterback of all time.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying we know what his career turned into.
Okay.
But in 2001, you thought I was being negative.
Yes,
there. No, but in 2001, we didn't know that at all. And right. I know you're talking about 02, but I want to go to 01 just for a moment, because I feel there are some similarities where Drew Bledsoe had just gotten a huge contract, and all the measurables were, of course, Bledsoe's better. Like, Bledsoe has a stronger arm. Bledsoe's big. Like, all these reasons. But it did seem like the team was playing better with Tom. And at some point, Drew got healthy and could have been reinserted into the lineup. And they obviously decided to stick with Tom. And it worked out brilliantly. What are you seeing anything about the Eagles, non-Nick Foles, that for some reason or another, they are playing better as a unit, as a team, even defensively, over this stretch since he's been inserted? That's where Genesis is magical. It seems inexplicable that guys unrelated to the quarterback are playing better since the quarterback change has happened.
I don't think it's inexplicable as much as understanding where you are in the season, and you think that you're going to show up after you win the Super Bowl and beat everybody. You think that there's going to, like during the regular season, there's going to be some games where the opponent doesn't give you their best shot. But it's every single week you're dealing with that. And then suddenly you've got a chance to be eliminated from the playoffs. And collectively you say, look, we got to stop this.
Desperation.
We have got to fix this problem. And they've got enough veteran guys and leadership and people that could stand up and say, okay, we're going to take a run at this. And it's got to be meaningful.
So you're saying even if Carson Wentz was at the helm, this is how this team would have stepped up and played? You really feel like they'd be in the exact same position? That there's no intangible, there's no nothing, there's no mystic to it. It's just that the guys realized they were up against the wall.
Well, sometimes if you feel like you have a magic charm or look just like a placebo,
and the Eagles used that lure that last year, that we're up against something. No one believed, like they needed something else to
help.
What
Coach and I believe in is through all the years, we know it's a team game. And we know the quarterback needs to be supported. And when you have a backup, you have to do other things to be able to support that quarterback. He knows that Carson Wentz is far more talented. But do they call the game the same? And how do the other guys respond? He knows Carson Wentz is not responsible for them having the type of struggle that they had. Man, their defense was bad. Their offensive line was average. They had no running game. And it seems like the team has built momentum at the right time. And because Nick Foles at the end, yeah, he was part of it, but we don't believe he was the force multiplier. If the offensive line was playing better, we believe they would have won 11 or 12 games with Carson Wentz being there. So the play calling, the other supporting characters around the quarterback have supported them. This is the ultimate team sport, and you have to support the quarterback. If they had supported Carson this way, they would have been fighting for the number one or number two seed, which they were doing last year when Carson was healthy.
And one thing you mentioned about this game in particular, that is something Nick Foles never had to deal with during the playoff run and hasn't had to deal with during this three-game winning streak, which is the element of having to go to the silent count, the element of having that type of crowd to where you forget the fact that you're playing the best defense in football, but your offensive line is going to be a tick slower on the get-off because of the silent count, and dealing with that. I don't know how that Eagles-Vikings game, which ended up being a blowout, would have gone if it was in Minnesota. And Minnesota's defense last year, as good as it was, in my eyes, not as good as this year's Bears defense.
And didn't come into the game playing well. People tend to forget, in that playoff game before the Minneapolis Miracle that they got out of that game, the Eagles should have been playing the Saints. The Saints scored 24 points in the second half against that Vikings defense, yep, and had over 200 yards. So the Vikings defense that they saw was not on the level of this Bears defense that will be taking the field.
And I think just going back to Carson Wentz versus Nick Foles, the players in the locker room, they like Carson Wentz, and then they see his skill set, just like Chris was talking about. But they know that Nick Foles can win in big games. So there is that element of buying into that.
Buying into the difference between another backup. Because when you come into the locker room and you know your starter's hurt and your backup doesn't have any experience and he's a normal backup, that he's inconsistent, he's prone to interceptions, and regardless of what the coaches say, the whole game plan gets changed because that guy's not as good. Nick Foles, because he was a starter and now he has had some playoff success, you don't see the drop-off in the attitude of the other 52. Because you don't have more confidence in him than you do Carson Wentz. You have more confidence in him than you do, who's the other guy? Studfeld.
Or Chase Daniel, the backup in Chicago, anything. Yes. But I also think, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I've heard you talk enough about quarterbacks all year. Quarterbacks were having great years, but have not yet played in the postseason. And you always say, I'd like to see them in the postseason. No matter how good you think Carson Wentz is, until he's healthy in a postseason game, tell me if I'm wrong, going to be a yeah, but with him that you need to see that has been removed with Nick Foles because of last year.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that. I've seen a lot of guys who go through the regular season and put up ridiculous numbers and they're playing loose. And then suddenly when you up the ante, when you up the tempo, when everybody's at an intensity level that you're not used to, they're not the same guy, or they wilt. And until you see them do it in those big moments, you just don't know if they can.
We talked about this yesterday. Which team of all the eight teams that are playing this weekend has the least amount of playoff experience?
Chicago Bears. 13 players, total 44. Of 44 games.
Yeah, so he may be a backup quarterback, but at least he's got a little experience there. Coach, we'll see you later in the show. Coming up, what do the Cowboys need from Dak Prescott if they are going to beat the Seattle Seahawks? That's next. This is First Things First. Tomorrow, it's a big showdown in Dallas as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC Wild Card game. All starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific tomorrow on Fox and the Fox Sports app. We'll get to all the Wild Card matchups in just a second. But first, D2 basketball. Sean Willett of Queens University in Charlotte dunking on the entire Virginia Union squad, basically.
Man, just the athleticism and the overall talent level of young people playing basketball. My son plays junior college basketball, and you see guys just that can do stuff like this. It is, I mean, there's 12 people in this gym. This guy's jumping, dunking from midway up the lane, see?
A lot of brothers on that court.
On to the NBA. De'Aaron Fox, second-year player, has been having an awesome season. Gets the and-one to fall.
Nick, we were having a conversation. Is De'Aaron Fox the fastest in the NBA, baseline to baseline?
With the ball in his hands, I was trying to think. Ish Smith, a guy nobody cares about, is on that list. Russ, I don't know if he's still on the list.
No.
De'Aaron might be the guy.
Yes.
Warriors, Rockets, Steph Curry looking like Chef Curry on this one. Watch the handles.
Ooh, and the little, Oh, finger roll. Vintage Steph.
It was a few people that got shook last night. Last night was not one of those clinic defensive. Oh, man, guys were getting shook down to the ground. Guys were making plays last night. They say it's a make or miss league. Man, they were making some shots last night.
Most notably, this guy.
Here it is, James Harden, the beard. Game-winning shot to go along with a great night of basketball as the Rockets beat the Warriors.
Down two, on the road, two-time defending champs, Klay on you, Draymond coming to help, in your eye. Look at that.
Man, he was spectacular throughout the game. His ability, and you see this double team through the pick and roll? This is the way Golden State had defended him throughout the game and in the overtime. You don't see teams do this unless it's typically in the playoffs. Now, Houston's problem is, can James Harden do that four times in the playoffs at the end of a stressful regular season? That would be the question in Houston.
Do you want to play Take Your Pick?
I'd love to, Jenna.
Colts.
You almost poked me in the eye with
that
pen.
I know. I got very excited.
See, she ain't asked me because I'm trying to get out of
the squirrels. Yeah, I know. She's smart.
They don't give me no pick.
Colts head into Houston this weekend. Big battle to watch will be in the trenches where J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney face a rebuilt Colts offensive line. CeCe, which unit has the advantage? Colts O-line or the Texas front seven?
Jen, I got to go with the offensive line. And the reason, not because I just believe in their overall ability, and Quentin Nelson playing the left guard, if you don't know anything about interior line play, put your eyeballs on this rookie. Because you're talking about changing the game, but their philosophy, not only their talent. Frank Wright has changed this organization. They have a conscious effort to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands. So for that, because of the coaching, I'm going with Frank Wright in that offensive line.
I totally agree. Their guard-center-guard combo is the best in football. So if when Luck does face pressure, it's not up the middle. It's pressure you can deal with on the edges. And as good as Watt has been, if not Aaron Donald, maybe Defensive Player of the Year. Clowney's been excellent. I get all of that. The Colts have allowed 8 sacks in the last 10 games. That's bananas. And so the Colts offensive line, maybe the best offensive line in football the last 3 months of the year.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.